Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Back to Buddhist Basics, Part 3, by Lama Cathy Wesley. This week, Lama Cathy will cover the third level of the Buddhist teachings, the Vajrayana. Also called the Indestructible Path, the Vajrayana builds on the foundation of the Hinayana's ethics and meditation, and the Mahayana's motivation to liberate all beings from suffering, adding in techniques that work with our inner awakened nature to expand our sacred outlook to embrace every part of our lives. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Taksim Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning or afternoon, wherever you are. I'm Cathy Wesley, and I am giving the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling talk today, both on YouTube and on Facebook. So thanks very much to all of you for joining us today. Today, I'm going to be completing last time on Buddhist basics, because these days, you know, these days we are in, it's very difficult for us to have all of the things that that we need in our life and all of the things that we need in our for our well-being, inner and outer well-being. And so because of these difficult times, I thought it would be good for us to go back to basics and talk a little bit about the basic teachings of Dharma and how those basic teachings can help us in our everyday experience and everyday life. So I'm going to start with a short prayer. And if this is a prayer with which you are familiar, you can join in your heart and with your voice. And if this is a prayer with which you're not familiar, you can join in your mind and thinking that you dedicate this session to all the goodness of yourself and to all sentient beings. I'll recite this prayer in Tibetan. O Sanje Chudang Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Pe Sunam Ki Drola Pinshir Sanje Drupar Sho. And then the prayer of the Four Immeasurables. May all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness, which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free of attachment and aversion to those near and far. And then I'll recite one more short prayer, and then we'll begin. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Dagi Chi War Pe De Den Shula Kadrin Chenpo Kone Che Sun Te Ku Sun Tugi Ngudrup Sal Du Sol. Okay, thank you. So I think it would bear repeating to talk a little bit about what we've discussed up to now, so you'll know that today's conversation is an outgrowth of what we've been doing already. The basic teachings that we started with was that the root of all of the Buddhist teachings is the teaching on Buddha nature, meaning that each and every one of us has within us an enlightened essence. You could call it an enlightened essence, but you could also just call it your mind which has the capacity to know itself and to experience itself directly. So this mind that we have has the capacity to know itself and to know itself thoroughly and completely. And so this, you could call it our Buddha potential, because this is what the Buddha Shakyamuni came to know and understand through the depth of his meditation. He came to know, understand, and realize his Buddha nature. And so as a result, he was able to give teachings, wisdom teachings, about our own Buddha nature and how we ourselves can accomplish the liberation of ourselves through understanding and knowing our Buddha nature. So I guess you could say the working basis, what makes it possible for us to practice the Buddha's teachings in the first place, is this mind that has the capacity to know, to understand and experience all things, and to know, understand and experience itself. So you might ask, well, if this is our basic nature, why is it that we don't experience that right now? Why is it that we don't experience that all the time? And the answer to that is that we may have a mind that is, the Buddha's teachings say that our mind is limitless. Some people use the word emptiness, like it's empty of solidity, empty of permanence, empty of materiality. But even though it is empty of those things, it is not a void, because it knows and experiences. Our mind can know things and our mind can experience things. So as a result, our mind is called limitless. It is without limit. Mind doesn't have a color, a shape, a location, beginning or end. But our mind is not nothing, because it knows and experiences, and it's always manifesting. It never stops. Just like we don't stop breathing and our heart doesn't stop beating, our mind doesn't stop experiencing. Even when we have moments of unconsciousness, these don't last for more than a few seconds, and then we begin to experience again. And so this limitless, luminous mind is what we seek to know through the practices of Dharma. And so how do we do this? We do this through what are called the three levels, or three yanas, Y-A-N-A, the three yanas, paths, levels, whatever word you want to use. The teachings are on these three levels. And the first talk that we did was about the first level of the Buddha's teachings. Sometimes it's called the Hinayana. And that Hina means smaller. Last week I was talking about that small Italian car. Someone said that it was a Ferrari, but it was actually called an Izetta, with an I-Z. Izetta. It's a one-person car. So when a person practices the Hinayana, or the first level of the Buddhist teaching, they're working with their own experience. They're working with their own liberation from suffering, and they're doing this through practicing the three basic teachings of the Buddha. He said, do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So those three things, doing no harm means don't harm yourself, don't harm others. Practice virtue means to take care of yourself and to benefit others. And tame the mind, it means to meditate. Because how else will we understand and come to figure out how we experience anything? How will we understand what is beneficial and what is harmful? So in this way, the initial level of the Buddha's teaching is pretty much about our behavior and our experience, and how our behavior shapes our experience. As the Buddha said, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts, we make our experience of the world. And so he said, if we think, speak, and act with an impure, meaning selfish mind, suffering is the result. And if we think, speak, and act with a pure mind, happiness is the result. These basic teachings are part of this first level of the Buddhist teaching. And we know this to be true because, for example, when we are very selfish and we hold on to things, the tight grip with which we hold people, places, ideas, and so on, this grip that we hold it in is actually painful, and it causes us to worry and have fear and anxiety. We have expectation that we're going to get something wonderful, and then fear that we're going to get something terrible. And so this expectation and anxiety are with us all the time. And so the practices of the first level of the Buddhist teaching address this expectation and anxiety by teaching us to do no harm and to practice virtue and to tame our minds. And so by doing virtuous things, we have less worries, we have less fear. And by refraining from harm, we don't harm ourselves and don't harm others, and also help to free ourselves from anxiety and fear. But it is the taming of the mind through the practice of meditation where we really begin to make progress on this first level of the Buddhist teaching. When we do quiet sitting meditation, which is sometimes called a shamatha, when we do this shamatha practice, what we are able to experience through that is our mind as our mind naturally is. And so if we can experience our mind as it naturally is, then we will have less fear and less anxiety, because we'll see the empty luminosity of our minds. And at first, this is very difficult because we have so many distracting thoughts. Our thoughts are going to the past, our thoughts are going to the future, and so on. But we're almost never right here, right now. And so what shamatha teaches us to do is, as that great book of the 70s said, be here now. It teaches us how to be present with ourselves in the present moment. And so as a result, practicing this shamatha, where we allow our attention to rest on the breath and then return our attention to the breath for a fresh start every time we wander, doing this over and over again trains our attention to be in the present moment. This cuts down naturally on fear and anxiety, and it also cuts down on our expectations, because we can not only experience ourselves, but we also can understand, see, and experience other people's thoughts and feelings. I mean, we can't see what they're thinking, but on their faces, we can see their fear and expectation and anxiety, and we can have a deep understanding that they're just like us. And so this is what we talked about in the first part. In the second part, about the second level of the Buddhist teachings, that we talked about the Maha or greater jhana, or sometimes it's called Maha or greater, not because it's better, but because it refers to a larger, vaster scope of our practice field. For example, when we are doing the Hinayana or the smaller vehicle, we're mostly just concerned with ourselves and our own experience of the world. But with the Mahayana, we begin to open up through empathy, recognizing that other people are just like us and recognizing that they suffer also. It's the beginning of empathy, which for many of us is the beginning of love and compassion. And so the Buddha, in his teachings on the second level of teachings, the Mahayana or greater jhana, asked us to have a greater scope for our practice. We were asked to practice not just for ourselves, but for the sake of and the benefit of all beings. And you can see how this can actually help with our understanding of doing no harm, practicing virtue, and taming our minds. Because if we begin to see that other people are just like us, we can begin to understand that what they are experiencing is the same thing that we're experiencing, that they are feeling expectation, they're feeling anxiety, and we can begin to feel some empathy for that. And feeling empathy for that, we can begin to calm down our expectations and begin to work with them in a more genuine and direct way. So that's a little bit about the theory behind the Mahayana or the greater vehicle. The practices of the Mahayana or greater vehicle are aimed at developing something called bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening and citta means mind. So bodhicitta, the mind of awakening, is the mind that wants to wake up from the ignorance of not knowing itself. And so what we do in the Mahayana is we emphasize the practices of benefiting others. We're not just going to benefit ourselves, we're going to benefit others. And that's what we learned last week when we learned compassion meditation in last week's session, where we imagined on the out-breath sending out love and goodness to beings, and on the in-breath we imagined removing their suffering. By training the mind like this, in love and compassion, by doing this over and over again, we begin to change our selfish focus and begin to gradually come out of our selfish mindset. And by doing this, we're actually more at ease. We're more, we have more happiness. We have more peace of mind and stability. And by doing this practice, this compassion meditation practice, we begin to broaden that scope of our practice, not just about ourselves, but for others as well. So that's what we talked about last week. And so if we look at all of the methods we've learned thus far, all of the methods are about understanding that we are not just this personality or this self concept that we have about me and mine. We're not just that, that there's more to us than what is shown on the surface, that there's actually a depth to us. And that if we can practice an awareness of that, and if we can practice a connection to that, that we can slowly peel away the layers of confusion that cover our Buddha nature, and that we can actually begin to unveil our Buddha nature for the benefit of ourselves and others. A number of years ago, the previous Kala Rinpoche was teaching about this at KTD Monastery, our home monastery and retreat center in Woodstock, New York. And during that teaching, he said, the reason that we don't experience our Buddha nature is because our mind is covered by four veils. The first of these veils is the veil of confusion. We don't recognize our mind as being limitless and luminous. We don't recognize that as our nature of mind. And the instant that we fail to recognize that as our nature, then we make the mistake of relying on habitual tendency, which is the second layer of veil, is the veil of habitual tendency. And the first one is called the veil of conceptual knowledge. Sometimes it's called the veil of conceptual knowledge, and sometimes it's called the veil of basic ignorance, meaning we're basically ignorant of our Buddha nature. And being ignorant of our Buddha nature, we then fall under the sway of the second veil, which is the veil of habitual tendency. And that habitual tendency is the habitual tendency toward a self concept and then clinging to that self concept. And then once we cling to our self concept, then we fall under the sway of the third veil, which is mental afflictions. Once we have a self, we've also created other automatically. Once there's a self, there's an other. In Boka Rinpoche's wonderful book on the Wisdom of the Heart Sutra, he says, once we have basic ignorance and then fall under the sway of habitual tendencies toward positing a self, he said, then we divide the world into me and not me. And then the me attempts to conquer the not me. So when we fall under the sway of mental afflictions, that means we see some things as friendly that we want and some things as unfriendly and we want to get away from, but we don't see them clearly. We see them under the veil of our mental afflictions, wanting some things, disliking others, and being indifferent to everything else. And when we feel these things, we tend not to just relax and be stably feeling those things. We tend to react to the feelings, thoughts, and emotions that we have. And by reacting to the thoughts, feelings, and emotions we have, we then do things under their influence. So when we act under the influence of mental afflictions, we create the fourth layer of veil that covers our Buddha nature, which is the veil of karmic accumulation. In other words, we harden and solidify all of the negative habits that come from self-grasping. And then we are locked in the cycle of creating experience and then experiencing what we've created and then creating more experience and then experiencing what we've created. And this is why the Buddha called this world of suffering samsara, or the cycle of cyclic existence and suffering. And so this is what all of the teachings of the Buddha seek to do. All of the teachings and practices of all three levels, the first level of the Buddha's teaching, second level of the Buddha's teaching, third level of the Buddha's teaching, all of these three levels teach us how to dispel these four veils. And in dispelling these four veils, what remains is our Buddha nature, which is naturally always there behind all of it. And so in the first level of the Buddhist teachings. We dispel these veils by first controlling our behavior, which helps to lessen our karmic accumulation. And doing virtue and staying away from negativity helps us with our mental afflictions, and then gradually with the other two veils. And so through these practices, we begin to calm down our grosser mental afflictions and our grosser karmic accumulation. We also begin to purify our karmic accumulation, because even though a lot of people think of karma as being some sort of absolute, it's not. It is not an absolute. It's actually a composite phenomenon, and as such, it can be changed. I'll never forget the teaching that Kempo Carter Rinpoche, my Dharma master, what he used to say. He'd say there's only one good thing about bad karma, and that is that your bad karma can be purified through your Dharma practice. And so that's why we do these practices, in order to purify our negativity and our mental afflictions and so on. So that brings us to the second level. The first level works with these four veils through ethics, morality, and also the practice of meditation. The second level, we work with these four veils through the development of love and compassion and bodhicitta, and also through an understanding of the basic nature of all things. And so when we develop love and compassion and an understanding of the nature of all things, then we begin to have more feelings of compassion, and we begin to lighten up and not be so harmful to ourselves and others. And so that's a little bit about the practice of the second level of the Buddhist teachings. As one of my teachers once said, when you increase your capacity for love and compassion, your selfishness automatically gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Because it's your selfishness that causes you to be stuck in the cyclic existence of samsara. So it stands to reason that if you increase your love and you increase your compassion, that naturally you will reduce your selfishness and therefore reduce the causes of your suffering. And so we talked about that a little bit last week when we talked about the stages of the Mahayana, or the second level of the Buddhist teachings, and the attainment of Buddhahood through that. Now, this week, we're going to talk about the third level of the Buddhist teachings. It's often called by the name Vajrayana. So remember, yana means level or stage. And Vajra, in this case, means indestructible. In fact, often the word Vajra is translated as being diamond-like. And that's because in natural science, we know that only a diamond can cut a diamond. Only a diamond can make a mark on another diamond. And therefore, when we talk about the indestructible nature, we're talking about our indestructible Buddha nature, which according to the teachings of the Buddha was never created and cannot be destroyed. This mind of ours that has had no beginning and will have no end, but merely moves through a series of experiences, this mind is like a diamond in that it is indestructible, and it also has the ability to reveal itself to itself. I know that's going to sound strange, but just as only a diamond can cut a diamond, only the mind can understand the mind. And only the mind can cut through these four veils. And so in the Vajrayana, we work with mind itself. The mind itself works with itself. And I know, again, that sounds a little strange, but let me explain a little more. According to the teachings of Trungpa Rinpoche, by the way, a lot of the teachings that we're talking about last week and this week both are found in Trungpa Rinpoche's book, The Three Yanas, or The Three Vehicles of Buddhist Practice. Sometimes it's called yana, sometimes it's called level, sometimes it's called stage, and sometimes it's called vehicle. Yana has a lot of meaning. And so the book that I've based a lot of my teachings on the last 2 weeks is called The Three Levels of Buddhist Practice, and it's by Trungpa Rinpoche. And you can find Trungpa Rinpoche and words about his teachings on his website, Rinpoche.com, R-I-N-P-O-C-H-E.com. And so you'll find a little bit about his teachings there. And so according to the teachings of Trungpa Rinpoche, the Vajrayana has two paths within it. So the path of the Vajrayana has two subpaths, the path of liberation and the path of skillful means. The path of liberation is the path that uses the mind to meditate on mind. You can learn about this through such practices as Mahamudra and Dzogchen and so on. And so through these practices on the path of liberation, the mind actually meditates upon itself. And this is now, if it sounds difficult, it is. And this is why in Vajrayana, it is very important to have a teacher to tell you the methods, to teach you the methods for properly doing these meditations. And so when you hear about the Vajrayana, you almost always in the same teaching hear about the importance of having a teacher in the Vajrayana. It's because that path of liberation and that path of skillful means have a lot of sidetracks and a lot of mistakes you could make. And so if you have a teacher, you will be less likely to fall under the sway of mistakes and sidetracks. So this method of meditating on mind itself through the path of liberation, the methodologies are taught by the teachers in such teachings as Mahamudra and Dzogchen. Mahamudra is the way it's taught in our Karmakaju lineage tradition. And so I'll be talking a little bit more about that. But the path of liberation, we learn gradually through accumulating merit and purifying our obscurations, we begin to loosen those four veils of our mental afflictions and our negative karma and so on. And then through the other practices, begin to loosen the veils of clinging to self and so on, until we can eventually experience our mind's natural state. And through being able to meditate on our mind's natural state, then our inner wisdom can sometimes be revealed. So that's a little bit about the path of liberation. But I'm going to spend a little more time talking about the path of skillful means. This is because these practices are much more accessible to us than the liberation practices, especially at first. In fact, when I first started practicing Buddhism about 40 years ago, the very first thing that I was taught was one of the practices of the path of skillful means. And that was the practice of mantra. Mantra and visualization are one of the main practices of the path of skillful means. And in the practice of mantra, we identify with a specific Buddha or Bodhisattva. And by identifying with a Buddha or Bodhisattva, we begin to, again, purify those veils, the veils of our karma, the veils of our mental afflictions, and our habitual tendencies and our basic ignorance. We actually use our visualization of ourself as a Buddha or Bodhisattva as a skillful means to accomplish an understanding of our Buddha nature. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that next. This particular teaching can be found in the book Creation and Completion by Trungpa Rinpoche. So he gives a much more complex and nuanced teaching on this than I'll be giving. But you can see an outline of what I'm talking about today on LamaKathy.net. LamaKathy.net, because on LamaKathy.net, there's a brief introduction to mantra and visualization meditation there, in which I give further explanations of these three things. And I learned these from one of my lamas at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra Monastery, and this particular teaching on how mantra transforms us is one that I love, and I love sharing. So I'm glad you're here so that I can share it today. If you remember what we were saying about Buddha nature, we all have it, but we don't see it. Why don't we see it? Because we have four veils covering it: our negative karma, our mental afflictions, our habitual tendencies, and our basic ignorance of our Buddha nature. So the practice of mantra is powerful and effective because it uses our very tendency to cling to our self-concept. It uses our tendency to cling, reflexively cling to things as mine and me and so on. It uses our tendency against itself. In other words, we use our selfish tendencies to break up our selfish tendencies. Let me explain. The way it was explained to me by my teacher is that right now in this world, we're confused about everything and we tend to fixate on everything as being solid, real, permanent, and unchanging. And in so doing, we fixate on three things in particular: our body, our speech, and our mind. So we cling to and fixate on our body, our speech, and our mind. And in so doing, we make a big mess in our everyday life. We cling to this body as being real and permanent so that when we look in the mirror and we see gray hair, we become a little bit distressed about our gray hair. And then we figure out, how can we cover up our gray hair? How can we make ourselves look better and younger? And so as a result of this, we cling to and suffer because we think of our body as being real and permanent. And so what the practice of mantra does is it replaces that tendency to cling to our body with a meditation in which we imagine that we have a body like the body of a Buddha or Bodhisattva. The image behind me is an image of Waitara. So if we were doing the Waitara meditation, we would imagine that we have the body of Waitara and that it is made of light and that it's insubstantial, and you could actually see through it. And so in this way, we gradually break our fixation on the solidity of our body by meditating upon our body as being empty inside and made of light. And by seeing our body as being empty inside and made of light, we break our fixation on the solidity of our body and we accumulate the experience that is called, we accumulate the experience that's called the experience of the unity of appearance and emptiness, or appearance and limitlessness. So by letting go of our fixation on our physical body and instead replacing it with the concept of ourselves as being made of light and empty inside, we meditate upon the body as being the unity of appearance and emptiness. And if we can practice this to its complete fruition, what we will experience is the realization of the inseparability of appearance and emptiness. And if we can do this over and over again, we can begin to break the cycle of fixation on our body as being solid and real. And anything we can do to lessen that fixation is going to be beneficial for us. Second thing we tend to cling to is our speech. Even though you could say speech is insubstantial because you don't see the words going through the air, even though speech can be said to be insubstantial, we treat speech as though it were solid, permanent, real, and unchanging. We know this because if somebody writes us a letter and calls us a name or says a bad name to our face, we feel as though we've been hit by something. And in that way, we treat those words as though those words were solid, real, and unchanging. And so that fixation causes us a lot of suffering. But in the practice of mantra, we recite a mantra and are taught to meditate on the mantra that we recite as the unity of sound and emptiness. And if we can meditate on the unity of sound and emptiness, we begin to break the fixation on our speech as being solid and so on. And so if we practice understanding the unity of sound and emptiness, eventually we will have the experience. And then if we continue to practice, we may actually reach the realization of the unity of sound and emptiness. But we also have a third aspect of our self that we cling to, and that aspect is called our mind. We think of our thoughts as being solid, real, permanent, and unchanging. I mean, how many times have we said to ourselves, oh, this is how I am, I will never change? Well, that's because we don't recognize that our mind is changing continuously and our thoughts are always moving and continuously changing. And so as a result, we need to have a discipline. And so in mantra meditation, we maintain an awareness of our body as being made of light, which is the body of the deity, the mantra, which is the speech of the deity, and then the nature of our thoughts, which we consider to be the mind of the deity. Now, it's not that the content of your thoughts are the thoughts or the mind of the deity. It's not like that, because the nature of every thought is emptiness, and the nature of the deity is emptiness. So it's equivalent, but it's not the same. So this means that your laundry list that you're working on or your grocery list that you're working on is not wisdom. It has the nature of wisdom, but it is not wisdom itself. And by meditating in this way, usually on a seed syllable in the heart of the Buddha or Bodhisattva upon whom you're meditating, we absorb ourselves in the practice of the unity of awareness and emptiness. And if we practice that well enough, then we will have the experience of awareness and emptiness and eventually reach the realization of awareness and emptiness. And so in this way, we take something that we are fixating on, our body, speech, and mind, and we replace it with an awareness of body as appearance and emptiness, speech as sound and emptiness, and thought as awareness and emptiness. And you may say, well, that's kind of difficult. And the answer is, yes, it is. And this is why at first, when we first start practicing mantra meditation, it takes us a while to kind of get the hang of it, to get all the pieces moving together. And until all of the pieces are moving together, what we are experiencing is a form of shamatha. This was according to a teaching given by the third Jhamgon Kantro Rinpoche at KTD Monastery way back in the 80s. When the 16th Karmapa was visiting KTD Monastery, the third Jhamgon Kantro gave a teaching, and somebody said, well, isn't mantra meditation just like, isn't it some kind of higher tantric meditation, and should average people be doing it? And his answer was, well, he said, it's actually a form of shamatha the way we teach it, because he said, if you place your attention on a mantra or you place your attention on a Buddha or Bodhisattva image, he said, that's a form of calm abiding or shamatha. And so in this way, he said, it's not that it has the potential to transform us, but at first, for most of us, it's going to be a form of a very powerful shamatha. And so it has a great deal of potential for us, but it's not just a shamatha meditation. It has more potential than that. And this was explained by His Holiness the Dalai Lama in 2006 when he taught at KTD Monastery. When he taught at KTD Monastery in 2006, he gave the Chenrezig Empowerment and gave us the transmission for the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the compassion mantra, is known by virtually every Tibetan child, and every beginning Buddhist will know the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. Well, during his teaching about this, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, well, if you think about the practice of Chenrezig, you're visualizing your body as being empty inside, and you're visualizing that it's made of light on the outside. He said, think about this. He said, it is a symbolic form of meditation on mind itself. He said, it's symbolic Mahamudra. Now, you remember a few minutes ago, we were talking about Mahamudra as being part of the Vajrayana's path of liberation practices, in which the mind meditates upon itself and comes to know itself completely. Well, as I said at the beginning, those practices can be pretty hard to learn. And so what the Dalai Lama was saying is, look, if that kind of practice is not easy for you, do the practice of mantra. And when you do the practice of mantra, you are symbolically meditating upon the nature of your mind, because the nature of your mind is emptiness and luminosity, or limitlessness and luminosity. And the emptiness is symbolized by the empty form of the Buddha or Bodhisattva upon which you're meditating. And the luminosity is the fact that that body is made of light. And he said, and what do you do at the end of a mantra meditation? He said, you dissolve everything into utter emptiness itself. And then for just a few seconds, 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, you can experience your mind in its natural state, which isn't Buddhahood, but it is a step toward understanding one's mind and achieving Buddhahood. So by doing this mantra practice of Chenrezig every day, a little by little by little, at first you're doing symbolic practice on the nature of your mind, and eventually it will break through and become meditation on Mahamudra. This also is something that I learned from my Dharma master, Kempo Carter Rinpoche. I had done a Chenrezig retreat, just a few days of meditating on the mantra and visualization of Om Mani Padme Hum and Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of Compassion. Well, not long after that, I had the opportunity to attend a teaching by Kempo Rinpoche. And during the question and answer period, I came up to the microphone and I asked him about this question about shamatha. I said, now, I was told by the third Jhamgun Kantrol that meditating on the form of a Buddha or Bodhisattva is a form of shamatha. Can it also be a form of Mahamudra practice? And Kempo Rinpoche said essentially the same thing that the Dalai Lama said, which was that it was he called it concordant. The translator used the word concordant Mahamudra practice. And that means, concordant means that it is very similar to Mahamudra practice. And I said, is that good? And he said, oh, yes. He said, because if you continue to practice this concordant Mahamudra, he said, eventually, it will naturally by itself turn into actual Mahamudra practice. Well, that kept me really encouraged. I haven't achieved any qualities through this yet. It hasn't happened for me yet. I haven't gained any realization yet. But the path itself has been so wonderful, because meditating on compassion is just makes you feel good inside. And being able to meditate on love and compassion and mantra and so on, it just makes you feel so good inside that by doing that kind of practice, it doesn't matter in the end for me if I get some type of enlightenment or realization. It just makes my life better. It makes my mind happier. And to me, that's a very, very good start. So the outcome of this third level of the Buddha's teaching, this level of the Vajrayana, we use mind to meditate on mind, either through the path of liberation practices like Mahamudra, or the path of skillful means practices such as mantra and visualization. By using these, and if we put all three of these yanas together, if we practice the beneficial activity, the ethics and morality, and the basic shamatha meditation of the first level, we have a foundation of stability in our mind and good karma, so that we're not always running from our negative karma. On that foundation, we then add the practices of the Mahayana, in which we practice love and compassion and expand our empathy and love for ourselves and all beings. And then on top of that, we build the top level of the practices of mantra and visualization, and which is the path of skillful means, and the practices of liberation, mind meditating on itself. And you can see how through the foundational practice, and then adding with love and compassion, and then completing with the Vajrayana practices, the Hinayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana practices, putting them all together and practicing them together, we have a full path that will bring great benefit to ourselves and all those around us from now until we reach enlightenment. And so in this way, if we get this opportunity to practice the three yanas in concert, in together, if we get to practice all three of them together, then even if we don't attain realization in this lifetime, we will have had a life based on ethical behavior, meditation, love, and the development of the capability of benefiting others through mantra practice. So we will have a life that has been very worthwhile and very rich and very powerful. And so as a result, this is why when the 16th Karmapa named our centers, he named the National Monastery Karma, Triana, Dharma Chakra. And he named the urban centers Karma, Teksum, Choling. And by doing this, giving these names, he was giving us our path to helping others here in the United States. Because Karma is our family name. It refers to Karmapa. Teksum, or Triana, refers to the three yanas being practiced in concert. And then Dharma Chakra, or Chuling, has the same meaning. Dharma Chakra is like Dharma Wheel, Dharma Place, Dharma Mandala. And Chuling means the Dharma Place. So they have the same meaning. One is in Tibetan and the other is in Sanskrit. The city center name, Karma Teksum Choling, is the Tibetan name. And the Karma Triana Dharma Chakra name is the monastery name is in Sanskrit. So in this way, our path has been laid out for us in the Tibetan tradition of practicing basic ethics and morality and meditation, love and compassion, and then an understanding of wisdom and the nature of all things. So in this way, I've hoped that I've been able to give you some of these Buddhist basics and to give you a clue as to why we practice the way we do, and to encourage you to take these practices yourself. Because even if we're new to Buddhism, we can practice Om Mani Padme Hum and then learn it from a master. And by learning this from a master, we can get a great blessing. And then connecting with teachers, we can learn all three of these yanas. And by practicing them, bring about goodness for ourselves and others. So this will be the conclusion of the series on Back to Buddhist Basics. And although I'm not able, I've got Facebook here and I've got YouTube here. So although I can't read my Facebook comments and questions, if you have comments and questions, you can put them in the comments either on YouTube or on Facebook. And I will answer them as best I can in this coming week. And then next week, I will start a new series. And the new series will be, it was what I intended to do before I ended up doing this, which was making friends with your meditation. Because a lot of people have asked me, I even got a Facebook message the other day from someone trying to understand how what you do with your eyes when you're meditating. And so it came to me that it's probably going to be a good idea for us to just review basic shamatha meditation as it's been taught by Kempo Karthar Rinpoche. And by reviewing these basic methods of meditation as taught by Kempo Rinpoche, I think that this will help us to understand this foundational practice of shamatha. So that's what I'm going to talk about next time. In the meantime, since we're all essentially on retreat during this quarantine period, I think this gives us an opportunity to practice a little bit more than we might have in other situations. And so I think firstly, we need to pray for all of the essential workers, the healthcare workers, and all of the people who are working in essential jobs that help keep this world turning, our material world turning, so that we can all have the circumstance to be safe and healthy during this time of pandemic. And first, take good care of yourselves, and also pray for all of these essential workers. And then, secondly, take a little time to do some shamatha practice, and to then watch your everyday life for these veils to be in action, your karma, your mental afflictions, and so on. And then practice Tonglen, compassion meditation, as much as you can, using the instructions that are in Kempo Karthar Rinpoche's book Dharma Paths. Those of you who are just seeing this for the first time, in Kempo Karthar Rinpoche's book Dharma Paths, which I have right over here, in his book Dharma Paths, in his book on page 118, 119, he teaches a very elementary form of compassion meditation that everybody can do. And please try to practice that. And if you don't have time for anything else, just say Om Mani Padme Hum. Om means this is according to Bokhar Rinpoche's explanation. He says, Om refers to the awakened body of the Buddha, and Hung refers to the awakened mind of the Buddha. Mani, M-A-N-I, Mani means jewel, and Peme means lotus. And Chenrezig is depicted as holding a jewel, which is one's Buddha nature, is symbolic of that, which, if we realize it, gives us all of our wishes. So it's like a wish fulfilling. And then Peme is a lotus, which is symbolic of the Bodhisattva who lives in this world but isn't stained by it, just as the lotus flower is rooted in the mud but blooms above it. And so by saying Om Mani Padme Hum, we're calling upon Chenrezig by name. And so even if you have time to do nothing else, if you can recite some mantras, this would be very beneficial. Again, feel free to ask questions and comments, and we'll dedicate our merit right now to all sentient beings in general, but most especially for all of those who are first responders and essential workers who are keeping things going so we can be safe, and for all of those people who are practicing safety out of concern and compassion for others, and also for all of our government officials. May they have wisdom and be advised by truth and wisdom so that they can help keep us safe. And so I'm going to recite a short prayer in Tibetan. And by reciting this prayer, we will think that our merit is flowing out from us and benefiting all beings. Or sonam dehi tamche zikpani tomne ne pedranam pamjene chega na chi balab drupai sipe sole drawar drawar show jampal pao jitar kempada kuntu zampo de on de shinde de da kungi jesu da loching gewa di da tamche raptu. Okay, thanks very much. And it's been a delight to see you. Be safe out there this week. And I'll see you next week at 1 o'clock here.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.